number two.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appeal 103203, Fidel Munoz-Avila versus Eric Holder, Jr. So, hi, Mr. Berg. Come on up. Look, you're clearing the courtroom. What's going on?
I hope it's not me personally.
What have you done, Mr. Berg?
I'm defeated before I begin. Thank you. If possible, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal,
sure.
If I may.
Got you down for 3 minutes.
Thank you. And may I begin?
Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Roy F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this next case before you, Mr. Fidel Munoz-Avila. Mr. Avila is a husband, a father, a hardworking taxpayer, and a homeowner. He's a respected member of his community, and he's never been convicted of a crime. If the government seeks to tear him from his family and deport him to a country that's currently suffering from horrific violence, Mexico. Why? Because of an alleged event which may or may not have taken place in February 1997, some 14 years ago. The Board of Immigration Appeals issued an opinion in this case. It was not unanimous. Board Member Miller dissented without opinion. But the majority opinion written by Board Member Malthus and joined by Board Member Grant, as what the respondent refers to as a key footnote. And in that key footnote, Board Member Malthus and Grant state, "We emphasize that the immigration judge's decision and our decision in this matter do not make a legal conclusion that the respondent made a false claim to United States citizenship." Well, we know that
given the implausibility of his explanation regarding the baptism certificate, how do we go about finding that the IJ's credibility determination was clear error?
Well, Your Honor, the judge made a determination that his explanation was implausible. However, he then ruled that Mr. Avila had made a false claim to citizenship. The board in its decision said that the judge had not made that conclusion. So I think if we look at the key footnote here, we see that the board got Judge Bauer's decision wrong. The respondent says that they either misread it or misstated what it was. In any event, I think the board has held that Mr. Avila did not make a false claim to U.S. citizenship. Rather, they conclude he had not proven that he had not done so. In other words, he had not proven a negative. The board, unfortunately, does not tell us what he could have done or what he could have done differently, rather. The respondent seems to indicate at page 33 of its brief that the board was leaving open a possibility for him to seek status in the future. But does not state that if the petitioner is deported, he's barred from returning for 10 years for a person who's been deported. He's barred from returning for 10 years for being unauthorized here for a year or more. And if he, in fact, made a false claim to citizenship, he's permanently barred from returning.
So isn't it true that the board was giving him at least some hope that he could return by doing it this way?
I don't see how the board was giving him any hope. I think the board simply got Judge Bauer's decision wrong, number one, and it said he didn't prove that he didn't do it, but it didn't say how. I don't see how the board is saying, okay, maybe someday in the future you can prove to someone that you didn't make this claim. If they were going to give him a break, they simply could have sent it back for another hearing.
Did he argue to the BIA that he timely recanted his misrepresentation?
I don't believe that was made. I wasn't his attorney at that point, Your Honor. Government's documents said that he withdrew his request to enter.
Do you concede that presentation of a baptismal certificate is an attempt to prove or establish that you're a citizen? Because
no, not at all, Your Honor. Whether or not it was in his pocket and it came out, whether he presented it, I do not concede that this record or the facts of this case, my client made a claim to being a U.S. citizen. A baptismal certificate, as the respondent acknowledges in their brief, is a document with no apparent legal significance, at least not in an immigration context. And if we look at what this record shows, we put aside for a moment our assertions of violation of due process and the written objections by the counsel below of the government documents, and that Judge Bauer violated the petitioner's right to due process, and that the government should have presented the makers of those two documents for cross-examination.
Yeah, but why shouldn't we consider the due process and the Eighth Amendment arguments waived, given that they do not appear to have been raised before the BIA?
Well, they were not raised. I believe, Your Honor, they are so fundamental, however, that this Court should look to them.
Would you say that in every case where arguments are waived, that it's so fundamental that we have to look at them?
I don't know if I'd say it in every case, Your Honor, but if we're looking at a constitutional deprivation, particularly if a statute is an argument that we're making in the Eighth Amendment, the Board, I don't believe, has the authority to address that. So I don't believe that that would have to be raised below. Nonetheless, if we look at the government's case here, it simply consists of three pieces of paper. A baptismal certificate, Judge Lefkoe, as you pointed out earlier, which is not a birth certificate, as the respondent referred to mistakenly several times in their brief. It's a baptismal certificate, which the respondent concedes is a document with no apparent legal significance. The I-213, which is a handwritten report that said that he attempted to enter by presenting a baptismal certificate. And the third document, the notice of visa cancellation and border crossing card avoidance, which says...
That's the problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. He testified that he had in his possession this baptismal certificate that belonged to a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, indicating that that person was born in the United States.
Well, our position, Your Honor, is that the I-213 and the notice of visa cancellation do not establish that he made a false claim to citizenship. In fact, that's what the Board says in their key footnote. They're not making a legal conclusion that he made a false claim to citizenship. If you look carefully at the I-213 and the notice of visa cancellation, they appear to contradict each other, because it says, the visa cancellation says he attempted to enter by presenting an entry document belonging to another. But a baptismal certificate is not an entry document. Nowhere do these two pieces of paper, the I-213 or the notice of visa cancellation, does it state he made a false claim to being a U.S. citizen.
Well, he testified that he didn't present it to the officials, but that statement, of course, contradicted his signed acknowledgement, the notice of visa cancellation.
Right. At the time, he was unrepresented. It had happened a number of years before, and he had already been held in custody. The government was given an opportunity to present their witnesses, and they chose not to do so. Judge Bauer did not require them to do so. Nonetheless, Your Honor, if in fact he had made a false claim to citizenship, our position is that Section 245I of the Act, this adjustment of status, extra waiver, should be liberally and generously construed to allow him to adjust status in the interest of family unity. That section uses the word notwithstanding, which is in Section 245A. If 245I cannot waive it, and he's permanently inadmissible for what happened, our position is that that would violate the Eighth Amendment because it would be an excessive, disproportional fine and punishment to him.
Could I take you back to the footnote and the tension between the IJ's decision and the Board's here?
Yes, Your Honor.
If I understand correctly, your position is that under the immigration judge's findings, correctly understood, your client must be removed and can never reenter the United States. Is that right?
A person who has made a false claim to U.S. citizenship after September 30, 1996 is permanently inadmissible.
And that under the Board's footnote, which, let's say, edges away from that conclusion by the immigration judge, he would be removed and would be unable to reenter for 10 years.
There's two separate bars for reentry. One is a person who's deported, that's under 212A, and then a person who's been unauthorized for a year or longer has a separate 10-year bar under 212A9B.
So the difference between the IJ's decision and the Board's decision is between a 10-year ban on return and a lifetime ban.
He would still need, Your Honor, to establish that he had not made a false claim to citizenship. The Board is saying he did not prove to them that he had not done so. They didn't say what he would have to do to prove that. So it's still a lifetime bar if a consular official or a border official says, well, in 1997, you made a false claim to being a U.S. citizen by presenting a baptismal certificate. The fact that the statute doesn't require an immigration judge or a Board of Immigration Appeals decision to say that he had made a false claim. And I think that's the fallacy in the respondent's assertion at page 33. Because Mr. Avila still would have to show that he's admissible to the United States. The board is saying in its footnote, Judge Hamilton, that we're not saying as a legal conclusion you made a false claim. We're saying you didn't prove to us you didn't. He still has to prove to that, if in fact he is deported, that he is not inadmissible. In other words, that he did not make a false claim.
I don't do immigration law very often as a district judge, but our review is whether the board made an error of law, right?
Yes, Your Honor, or if there was a due process or a constitutional deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think, what is the error of law in the board saying he did not prove that he had not made a false claim of citizenship?
I think the first error of law is the first part of the footnote, and that is where they've got Judge Baumgartner, the immigration judge decision's wrong. The second is we believe it's an error of law because we believe that he did establish that he had not made a false claim to citizenship.
But that's the documents issue of weighing the evidence, which we can't review, isn't that right? I mean, there is clearly
evidence. Well,
you look
to the evidence to see if the law supports their conclusion. Our position is that he did not make a false claim to citizenship, and there is nothing in this record to show that he did. They brought forth no witnesses. Their documents do not say that he did.
Documents admissible, and it says that he did.
I don't see, Your Honor, where their documents say that he made a false claim to citizenship. If we're referring to the I-213 and the cancellation of the visa document. Of course, there was no visa. That's just what they call the document. But if we look at the record of deportable alien, their I-213 at page 673, it says that he attempted to enter by presenting a baptismal certificate. It doesn't say that he claimed to be a U.S. citizen. They don't charge him criminally with doing so, and they allowed him to leave the country, to withdraw his request for entry. Your Honors, I thank you very much, and I'll reserve whatever time I have. Thank you very much.
Mr. Tucker, what did you do with Mr. Palau?
He's in a closet somewhere, Your Honor.
What?
He's in a closet somewhere. He's on vacation.
One of ours. Okay.
May it please the Court, my name is Colin Tucker, and I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent, the Attorney General. This case really boils down to a straightforward question, and that is whether substantial evidence supports the agency's determination that the petitioner is ineligible for adjustment of status and thus removable for having entered the country without inspection.
But if, as the BIA states, there's no legal conclusion that he made a false claim to U.S. citizenship, then on what basis could the IJ find that he failed to meet his burden of demonstrating that he was not admissible?
Well, a petitioner or an applicant for adjustment of status must demonstrate that they are admissible, and the burden to do so is on them. They must show clearly and beyond a doubt. So the fact that there is no affirmative legal conclusion that petitioner did make a claim to citizenship does not mean that petitioner has met his burden of showing he did not do so clearly and beyond a reasonable doubt.
So is it your position that we need not determine whether he made a false claim of citizenship, but there is evidence to indicate that he may have made such a claim and therefore he failed to prove he's admissible?
I think that sums it up nicely, Your Honor. Again, it seems like the board in footnote number one was actually attempting to avoid reaching an affirmative conclusion that petitioner made a claim to U.S. citizenship. It was content to say he failed to prove he did not, thus was not eligible for adjustment, and thus could be removed for having entered the country without inspection.
Well, assuming that we don't find this issue waived, how do you respond to the argument that in signing the notice of visa cancellation, he recanted his misrepresentation, and therefore it cannot be considered as a ground of inadmissibility?
Your Honor, I'm unaware of any precedent that supports the notion that an applicant who is detained at the border and then withdraws and attempts to enter in lieu of removal proceedings has recanted any of the events that occurred at the time he attempted to enter.
Isn't this an impossible burden? How does one prove? What would be sufficient burden of proof so that a person, the lawyer for the immigrant, knows what they have to bring forward to prove this vast negative?
Well, Your Honor, I think a good start would have been providing a credible alternative explanation for the sequence of events that led DHS to charge petitioner with having made a false claim in the first place. Now, here petitioner was given ample opportunity to do so, and instead what he told was a story so incredible that the immigration judge categorized it as one of the most amazing stories he'd ever heard. So, you know, the nature of the documents and what they say, combined with petitioner's inability to provide a credible explanation for why they say it, I think is sufficient to prevent him from meeting his burden of proof here.
You know, the brief cited Pawlowska. It cited it for the proposition that that issues of voluntary departure cannot be raised on appeal. But in Pawlowska, we recognize the questions of law can be raised regarding a voluntary departure. I guess we further considered the issue, even though it had not been raised to the IJ or the BIA, because exhaustion issues, of course, are not jurisdictional. I mean, isn't the challenge here a question of law in that the IJ considered the false statement that was made in 1997 in determining, you know, whether he possessed good moral character, whereas the statute requires good moral character for only the 5 years preceding the application for voluntary departure?
Your Honor, I think that what the agency also considered with regard to voluntary departure is the fact that petitioner told a patently incredible story during the course of his immigration court testimony. Now, that would have fallen within the 5 years and thus been a proper grounds for the finding.
See, I'm trying to figure out, to be perfectly honest, whether the denial of voluntary departure should be remanded. So help me.
I don't see any reason why that would be necessary, Your Honor. The argument was never raised, although you have already noted, indeed, that exhaustion is not mandatory. At the same time, while it is a question of law, I think the question of law can be resolved in favor of the decision based on petitioner's incredible testimony.
You know, this is, I mean, you understand what we see here. And here we see, you know, a person of what would certainly have seemed to be very fine moral character, a man who worked, paid his taxes, no criminal record. You know, this is not the kind of person that we normally, you know, want to shoot back to their country of origin.
I think I understand that obviously there is not a lack of sympathetic factors as far as this case goes. However, we determined that we would move forward on it based on the fact that there was a final order of removal and the fact that a petitioner who testifies as incredibly as the petitioner in this case did does not warrant that kind of discretionary determination.
How did the petitioner come to the attention of the INS?
A petitioner filed, I believe, Your Honor, in 2001, he filed an affirmative application to adjust his status with the agency. The agency looked into, you know, what past petitioner had as far as his immigration goes, and that's when the forms in question came to their attention, and they denied the application on that basis. Regarding petitioner's argument as to whether or not Section 245I requires admissibility, first I would point out that argument as well was not exhausted before the board. Section 245I-2A explicitly preserves 245A's requirement that applicants for adjustment of status be admissible. The notwithstanding language that petitioner cited to in Section 245I is not meant to dispose of the requirement that applicants be admissible. It's meant to dispose of the requirement that they have entered with inspection or have been paroled. Petitioner is essentially asking for a reading of this statute that explicitly and deliberately ignores what the statute says, because doing so would be helpful to petitioner.
Is there any news on the petitioner's motion to reconsider before the board?
Actually, Your Honor, I looked into that yesterday, and the board has not moved on it.
Thank you.
Huh. What are the chances?
The board, I know. Finally, as far as the argument, the Eighth Amendment argument that a lifetime bar would violate the excessive fines clause, this court has very straightforwardly ruled in the past that removal and its consequences do not constitute a fine and thus do not fall within that clause of the Eighth Amendment. Furthermore, I think there's some, again, I think that the board acted here in order to prevent the lifetime bar from applying, and I think that it did so successfully. So to the extent that that argument should even be considered, I would say that it's moot.
So suppose the petitioner is removed later this year and 11, 12 years from now seeks a visa to return to the United States. How does he prove he never made a false claim of U.S. citizenship here?
I don't deny, Your Honor, that this set of facts is always going to exist. And just as it prevented him from being able to demonstrate his admissibility this time around, it could well do so in the future. All I can say is that there's no statutorily mandated lifetime bar here, petitioner will, at the very least, should he seek to reenter, get another bite of the apple.
It's Alice in Wonderland, isn't it?
To an extent, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make sense then for us to remand this to the board, because there are very real consequences that flow from the final decision of the board, and yet we're all, I think, at least I am, struggling to understand exactly what the board held or ruled, because there's this silent dissent and then the sort of ambiguous statement about the review of the IJ's decision is problematic, shall we say. So wouldn't it be better to remand and say, tell us exactly what you mean here?
Your Honor, I think that the board's decision, though it does contain the error that we've discussed, is interpretable to the extent that we know what it said, what it meant to do, and what the ramifications are going to be. Were the board to reassess this situation, if to the extent that there was an error here, the error favors petitioner, because we are left with the conclusion that the board did not affirmatively find the petitioner made a false claim, and thus no lifetime bar applies.
Well, maybe, but you've conceded in response to Judge Hamilton's question that it's always going to be there, and if we treat this man like a criminal, which this seems to be doing, he really doesn't have any realistic hope of ever returning, because he's always got to face this issue.
Now, Your Honor, I think that would be true for any petitioner who is found not to have made an affirmative claim of citizenship, but is found to have proven that he did not. Yes, in every one of those cases there will be no lifetime bar, but indeed in every one of those cases he will always have to deal with those facts should he attempt to reapply. I don't think that's a grounds for, unfortunately, remanding this particular case.
So you would say that the baptismal certificate is an attempt to demonstrate citizenship, and that that's the basis, not this good moral character or lack thereof issue.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think the reason the petitioner is removable is because he failed to demonstrate that he did not make a claim to citizenship, and that failure, or the agency's finding of that failure, is predicated on the contents of the forms combined with petitioner's incredible testimony.
The baptismal certificate does include a claim that the person it applies to was born in some place called Harbor City.
Harbor City, Your Honor, yes.
And do we know where Harbor City is?
It's not contained within the record, but a search of Google Maps tells us it's in the Los Angeles area, Your Honor.
Okay.
There's nothing further I'm prepared to conclude. I would ask that the court uphold the agency's determination.
Thank you. You did such a nice job that maybe we should just keep Mr. Plow in the closet.
He did a wonderful job. And he told me he only realized he had this case a month ago. So, but I hope you don't really did such a great
job. Mr. Berg, you are such a gentleman.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. And you are always very gracious. Judge Hamilton, if I can comment quickly on what you noted in the baptismal certificate, it does not state the person was born in the United States. And I don't believe Google Maps existed in 1997.
Where's Harbor City?
Harbor City, right. So it doesn't say where Harbor City is. It's in California. Or it
must be in the Philippines, I think.
But it doesn't. On its surface, I don't see how this document shows the person was born in the United States. The baptism certificate. As to the Eighth Amendment, I believe counsel is referring to the Zamora Molina case in which this court said that a removal order was not a fine. But we're talking about something more than a removal order. We're talking about a lifetime bar to returning. As he conceded, as you pointed out, Judge Lefkoe, these facts will always be the facts of this case. And whether he applies in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, the State Department will have this record. And they'll say, you presented this in 1997. The record indicates that you did this. We said you made a claim to citizenship. How does he overcome that? Our position is if they're contending that's a claim to citizenship and it's a lifetime bar, that's unreasonable, disproportional, and violative of the Eighth Amendment. Your Honors, as to the motion to reconsider, motion to reopen, they were both timely filed, both still pending. We would ask Your Honors to remand this case back there. That way the board can consider it all at the same time. Maybe they will reconsider and remand it to the immigration court. Judge Bauer is no longer there. We believe he made some errors. We believe he took the role of the prosecutor, asked 60 very adversarial questions. So Mr. Avila would get a fair hearing. Nonetheless, Your Honors, we thank you very, very much for your time, and we ask you to grant the petition for review. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thanks to both parties for a real